Welcome back to Schneps Connects. I want to make sure that everybody knows that, of course, we have the Schneps Connects podcast that you're listening to, but we also host monthly networking events. So check out schnepsconnects.com, and I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast to make sure you get updates whenever we release new episodes. But today we're here to talk with Jeffrey Finkel, who is Chair Emeritus of Well Life Network and a longtime leader who spent 18 years on the organization's board of directors, including 12 years as chairman. During his tenure, Jeffrey helped strengthen governance, guide strategic growth, and recruit key leadership that positioned Well Life to expand its impact across New York. Well Life Network is one of New York's leading nonprofit human services organizations, providing behavioral health, developmental disability, family support, vocational training, and care management services to more than 25,000 individuals and families each year. So Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining and looking forward to hearing more about you and the organization.
Thank you, Josh, and thank you for showing an interest in the Well Life Network.
Well, it's my pleasure. And listen, we love to hear about organizations that are supporting New Yorkers. And, you know, I also love to just learn about people's journeys. How did they end up where they ended up? And, you know, for yourself, I'd love to hear your journey to getting involved with the Well Life Network.
Yeah, wow. So about 20 years ago, the Well Life Network was sort of facing a perilous situation. The leadership in place at that time, for a variety of reasons, fell out of favor with the New York Charities Bureau and the Attorney General in the state of New York, and had to really operate under their guidance. As such, I think two-thirds of the board was forced to resign. The remaining members were very capable, and one of which I had known asked me to join the board because he knew, being in the venture capital industry, I had some board experience and some experience with governance. So my sort of journey didn't come from the, you know, the agency's mission. It really came from sort of my professional skill set of being on boards and helping sort of right the agency that was at a very vulnerable time.
So talk a little bit more about Well Life Network's mission, what you guys do, the services you offer.
We really serve vulnerable New Yorkers. So the way to think about it is across sort of three planes, right? One are the developmentally disabled community. And these are people who are, in some cases, extremely disabled. We provide housing and care programs for them. And that's, you know, a very vulnerable group in New York. Number two, the mental health population, or behavioral health population. You know, behavioral health issues have always been in the background. They're now in the foreground. There's less stigma around it. But we provide care management, housing, and clinical support services for that community.
Terrific.
And lastly, substance abuse. So through the OASIS Department, the Office of Substance Abuse State of New York, we're providing clinical programs for people who are trying to battle, you know, substance problems.
You know, Jeff, I don't know if you know, my mother founded Life's Work, which has group homes, you know, throughout the New York region. And that was, you know, an organization she really started.
Well, congratulations.
So, yeah, thank you. So I commend you, you know, for the work your organization does, because it's very important. A lot of people that are vulnerable that need support services. And I know that you probably have to fight for every dollar you get.
Well, you know, you kind of touched on one of the most difficult things in running the agency. I mean, first of all, not every program breaks even, right? So we have to make sure that we have enough programs that do well enough to support the ones that don't. Because again, we're responsible to the state of New York who funds us and the community that which we serve. We're not responsible to shareholders. We're not for profit. You know, we're encouraged to support programs that don't always break even. And that's hard. The second thing that's hard is the way the state of New York reimburses us for services changes every year. It's very, very hard to budget when we don't know the method with which our reimbursement rates will change.
So the rates themselves, or the time it takes to get the money, or both?
The rates, the actual dollars per year. A lot of variance to plan for. I'll tell you, I got to give our CFO and our FP&A team a lot of credit for the plan they do. It's a really a meticulous process. Quite frankly, we had our finance committee meeting yesterday because we have a fiscal year that ends in June. So we approve next year's budget. and just the effort they go through to kind of figure it out, sure the agency stays solvent. It's a yeoman's job for sure.
Yeah. Talk about some of the other challenges. I mean, especially thinking long term, because that must be difficult. You're saying, you know, your reimbursements change every year. So how do you think about long term planning?
At the strategic planning level, we think more about the big shifts. Like one big shift is managed care, where there'll be an agency that's going to sit in front of the state agency. So we're funded by some mental health, Office of Person with Developmental Disabilities, and OASIS, which is substance abuse. And behind them, it's Medicare. But now managed care means there's going to be an agency sitting in front of those deciding on how we get reimbursed. So that's a long-term strategic thing. So we have to think about what that's going to mean, how we have to operate differently. So I'd say at the strategic planning committee, we think about those big shifts. We think about what businesses that we want to be in. And again, it's not through the lens of profit and loss as much as it's through the lens of what the state needs and what our clients need. I think for us, housing is something we do really well. And, you know, in fact, last year, I think we opened up 176 new beds. We also invested like $120 million in two new facilities that will give us 203 new beds in 2026 and Long Island. So, you know,
are those, when you say beds, are those places where people can actually live, or is it places that for inpatient and stay for a little while and then leave?
Places where they and oftentimes families can live.
Got it.
We just built this. Well, it hasn't opened yet, but this beautiful facility in the Bronx, and we did a tour, and you can see, I mean, these are going to be, you know, they're studios, one bedrooms, two bedrooms, families who otherwise might be on the street.
I love it. I'm so happy to hear that. You know, I've been talking to a lot of nonprofits on my podcast, and I feel like it's really important to share your stories because you're doing work that, you know, is so critical. And I've been talking to a lot of them just about housing because, you know, nonprofit housing is a critical component to securing roofs over people's heads. But a lot of the nonprofit leaders I've been speaking to have been struggling with the costs of operating some of their real estate, whether it's because of the increase in insurance or the fact that when they're affordable, they can't borrow as much money against them to be able to open up more housing. Are there challenges that you have to face when it comes to the housing that you support?
Yeah, all of those. The financing of these houses is kind of complicated. It's supported by the state in advancement of our rate. We also creatively use investment tax credits, which is a whole complicated structure. I don't want to bore your audience with trying to dissect it, but that really helps us. And then we're pretty good operators. So we've kind of figured out how to keep the services that the residents need, you know, in place in a way that we can afford to do it.
Let's talk about leadership development. That's got to be key. You've been with the organization quite some time. And if I have it right, you're bringing on a new CEO, Sherry Tucker.
Well, no, Sherry's now been with us for, God, maybe 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm sorry. I know that she had been a previous guest on the podcast, but I wasn't sure how long her tenure was.
Yeah, she's fantastic. In fact, as you may know, we're having our gala tomorrow night. And I'm receiving the Legacy Award because I just became Chairman Emeritus. And I was preparing my remarks right before this call. And the one thing that I'm going to say tomorrow night, and I'll say it right here on your show, is probably the single greatest achievement in my 18 years on the board is finding Sherry Tucker. I mean,
that's awesome. Yeah.
She came as a consultant to work alongside our then CFO. She quickly became that CFO. And then upon the retirement of the executive director, she was the unanimous choice to lead the agency. She's really done a fabulous job. We're very, very lucky to have somebody with her sort of sensibility, emotional intelligence, and hardcore financial skills to be able to drive this agency to where it needs to go.
Well, listen, that's a great achievement because it's one thing to help operate and run an organization. It's another thing to be able to hand it off and make sure it continues to be a healthy organization. So that's certainly a great accomplishment. What other lessons? I mean, you talk about becoming chair emeritus, which doesn't mean you're getting old. It just means you're passing the baton. But what lessons could you share in terms of your time in the leadership role of the organization? Is there any kind of things that you could share that could be pertaining to things other nonprofit leaders or business leaders can learn from?
Well, this is probably the most complicated business, if you will, whose board I've served because of just our revenue lines are very hard to understand. I'll tell you, Josh, the acronyms that are thrown around in it's been
More
just,
than the military.
we literally need a guidebook to go by to see what all of the acronyms actually mean. But I guess I would say the one thing that I've learned on this board, because again, we've had between 13 and 15 board members. Most of the private boards might have five, maybe seven. I would say it's really the chairman's role to sort of get consensus among, in our case, 13 highly skilled, opinionated people that come with very specific domain expertise and really allow them to explore the solution, but at some point aggregate everybody together in consensus and make a motion and get something going. I would say for me, that was the biggest thing I learned. It's not scientific, it's by feel, really. But that's one thing, and I think that's sort of the nature of this being a complicated business with different kinds of people on the board and secondarily being a very large board.
You mentioned the gala coming up. The podcast obviously is going to come out after the gala is over, but talked a little bit about the goals of the gala. I mean, it's great you're being recognized, but I'm sure, the gala serves a lot of purposes.
The gala primary purpose is to raise money. I'd say
Sure. Yep.
1A, 1B is to really honor all of the people in our, let's say, constituency, which means our clients and our employees. And, to let the world know that we exist. We always think we're one of the largest, best kept secrets. We're the third largest behavioral health organization in the state of New York, $130 million annual budget. We
Wow,
employ
I didn't realize that.
1,700 people. We're pretty big. And we're very close, Josh. We are within 4% of our goal on fundraising. It's been great. And our fundraising goal this year was significantly above last year. So I'm pleased that we're close, but I'll just put it out there to the audience. Come to our website. It can be after the gala. We're going to keep the donation page up. Go take a look, connect with the agency, and any donation, whether it's $50 or $500, is appreciated and gets us closer to our goal.
Can you say the website, please?
www.welllifenetwork.org.
So I'm sure money talks. That's got to be, obviously the primary contributions that you're looking for. But what other ways can people get involved?
Well, I'd say if one is not able to participate as a board member, because we are looking for good leaders,
Okay.
and one is not in a position to give financially in a significant way, there are all kinds of volunteer opportunities at the agency. We go to the houses that we own, the apartment buildings, we do gardening, we
Love it.
refresh them. We take people, some of our constituencies, to ball games. There's all kinds of opportunities for people to donate time if they cannot donate their dollars.
Do you have locations in all five boroughs, Nassau stuff? Where are the locations spread out across?
I would say dominantly in Brooklyn and Queens.
Okay.
And now with this big building in the Bronx, that would be big. And then we're fairly big in Suffolk County, slightly lighter in Nassau.
Got it. And then what about advocacy? It's got to be a big part of, what the mission is to make sure that, advocating on behalf of your services. How can people help in that way?
Well, I mean, we do. I think we're very internally focused on being a great agency and serving our constituents well. And certainly, in service to that, we advocate for the industry. We advocate for proper reimbursement rates. I mean, we do want to get the message out about mental health, getting it out of the foreshadows and into the mainstream, and getting rid of the stigma. So, certainly, we advocate there. But I would say, again, we want to be the best agency. We want to have the best operating metrics, serve the people who rely on us really, really well. And that's where I think our focus is.
So let's talk about the future. We touched on a little bit, but what would you say are WelLife Network's current priorities, their growth opportunities, and vision to serve more New Yorkers?
We have these discussions in the board at the board level all the time, and Sometimes I think those priorities shift depending on what's going on politically. But I think one of the things that we realize is that being a housing provider is something that makes sense for the agency financially, and also really serves an unmet need, particularly in the state of New York. So I think you'll probably see more real estate development from us, more housing going up. Finding land for these projects is not easy. It's, in fact, quite difficult. But I would say directionally, that's one of the areas you'll see us focus on in the future.
That's terrific. Well, let's just touch base again on the board. What do you look for on board members?
Well, you know, when I joined the board 18 years ago, it was really my vision to look at all of the domains in which the company operated and try to find an expert who had governance experience, but had also professional expertise in that domain. So, for example, Brian Regan, who is now the new chairman, was a very senior executive in the Columbia Presbyterian Healthcare Group. He sat on the boards of some of their hospitals. His whole background was quality of service. He was a perfect recruit for the board because he brought that discipline. He could look at the patient complaint logs or just the incident logs and give us a real perspective. Mark Ehrenstein, who I also brought on the board, is a private equity executive in the healthcare industry. So you mm-hmm. understand direction and models and where things are going. At the time, we'd brought someone on who was an IT expert because, you know, we were sort of outgrowing our IT infrastructure. So it was sort of important for us to kind of fill in the domain. So that's, let's say, one area. The next area was diversity, right? We wanted to have a board that represented what our clients look like. So we put that in place. In fact, one key member of our board, Nia, she is the parent of one of our clients. She also has a finance background from Citibank, but she also brings sort of that experience as a parent who uses the agency for a child. So that was important. I think today we have a pretty well-diversified board. We're well-represented across race, across gender, and across domain expertise. I mean, we still have a few more seats to fill.
Okay.
That's how we look at it.
Well, Jeffrey, it's been really a pleasure talking to you. And hopefully somebody listening will reach out if they want to participate in the board or get involved in other ways. You guys do great services, and I'm glad that we're able to help inform just a couple more people would be beneficial. So thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you, Josh. And again, they'll be welcome if they raise their hand.